Hi, my name is Tony Dobies. I'm the social media director at West Virginia University. So I like to say that I spend most of my time in meetings. My team in the back of the room can attest to that. I see them at 30 minutes at the beginning of the day, 30 minutes at the end, and then I'm in meetings all the rest of the day. But I oversee our social media strategy and our main university accounts and our admissions accounts. I got the nice challenge over the last year in that our university relations unit, which I'm a part of, and our enrollment management teams combined to one. So while we had most of our goals on social media related to recruitment in some way, they really became related to recruitment within the last year. So that's kind of how I have gotten into the recruitment side of things.
I'm Lisa Fayed. I'm the Director of Digital Strategy and Analytics at Stevens Institute of Technology. We're located in Hoboken, New Jersey, just right across the river. Under the Digital Strategy umbrella, I oversee social media, at least the main social media accounts at Stevens. However, our undergraduate admissions section does not have a strong social media presence at the time, so student recruitment, at least on the undergraduate side, is always at the forefront of our social strategy. Our graduate admissions does have a dedicated staff, but I do work closely with them in student recruitment as well.
Hi, everyone. I am Erica Fields. I am the social media manager at Carnegie Dartlett. We are a higher education-specific digital marketing agency, and we work with colleges and universities all around the country and starting to get international as well, which is a whole other fun challenge. But my role really is working with any of our clients that are doing paid social media campaigns and making sure that we're using their budgeting dollars the most effective as we can.
All right. My name is Michael Benning. I'm with the University of Iowa and the social media director there. My responsibility is to develop the strategy for our team. We run the main institutional account, so at UIowa. We have a separate admissions office who also have their own accounts. We work somewhat closely with them on those things, but regardless, one of our main target audiences is certainly students and prospective students. In addition to creating the strategy, I create, edit, and approve content and serve as kind of a campus expert for all the other folks on campus that run social media accounts to give them guidance and resources to help them in their efforts. And then my most direct connection to admissions is, and we do work very closely, is developing and executing digital ad campaigns.
Great. So I want to start out first by talking a little bit about content. You know, we have so many things that we could focus on whenever it comes to recruitment, but, you know, you can only focus on one thing at a time. So for you guys, panelists, what key messages are you focusing on whenever it comes to that recruitment message and those prospective students?
I think for Stevens, I always have the philosophy that we're not just selling an education product as, programs. We're selling an experience, and a pretty expensive one at that. So when we're developing content for social, really focusing on the campus experience, especially for Instagram and Snapchat, is a core of our strategy. Just trying to find strengths in your, not even just your campus, but the community outside of your campus. That's especially important for urban campuses like mine. But that is what we focus on a lot, at least for the social strategy and student recruitment.
I agree with Lisa on that. I work with over 300 different institutions, and it's pretty easy for us to be like, we offer an undergraduate program in nursing, come here. Like, everyone else is doing that. So we think very strategically about what makes the institution unique and why a particular student might be interested in the program that we're promoting over another program that's very similar, especially if it's in the same geography. But I think it's also really important to be thinking about the channels you're pushing content on, and what you're putting on Instagram stories is going to be very different than you might be posting on LinkedIn and things like that. So we also think about the platform and kind of the content that a user is going to be seeking on that platform.
So certainly student life is a significant part of what we're talking about. So as it's applicable to everyone here, what is your key differentiator? What are the things that make you different? Because we're all talking probably about student life on social media. And so how we do that is one of the things that we have is monthly themes. We have five of them charted out throughout the year, and they speak specifically to some key differentiators at our university. And so each month, you would passively notice that we would be specifically talking about one of these key themes throughout the year, basically.
Yeah, and I think for us at WVU, we know that we're sending about, you know, a couple hundred pieces of mail, emails a couple times a week. They are seeing things in so many different ways. One of the things that I push our digital team and our admissions unit as well is to find ways in those materials to get them to follow us on social media. While they get those emails, while they get those print pieces, if they follow us, they see us on a day-to-day basis. They see our content, they see the things like student experience, like that student life, the stuff that they're looking for on social. If we can get them in the back of their mind, we are always there. That helps. So I try to push that as much as I can. So for us, we have a really tiny budget in terms of what we can do for social advertising. So a lot of what we do is organic. And we try to use our main accounts to push some of those things and get that out there. For you guys, when do you go from organic to paid? When does that process take place? Do you all manage that as well? Can you talk a little bit about how that works for you all?
Sure. We view paid as something that's exceptionally important. We've increased our budget over the last year by like 100%, basically because we were able to show success and impact in the year prior. And so what paid allows us to do and what organic doesn't. Organic is, again, the people that already follow us or that we are hoping to follow us. Maybe we'll get lucky and they share it and their friends will see it. But paid really allows us to get and speak to a very targeted audience who we specifically want to talk to. And so that's just a tremendous asset and so invaluable, really, in recruitment efforts. And we work with our admissions office to gather specific targeting lists so they have their prospective students that they are emailing on a regular basis. That's just a total no-brainer to be utilizing those on social media, uploading those lists, and speaking directly to them through targeted ads.
My university, we're structured maybe a little differently than a lot of universities. My social media team does not handle paid promotions at all. That is all handled through our marketing team. So it's very separate, but there is a lot of coordination to ensure we don't have an overlap in content to make sure that they're not targeting a lot of the same users. So the users aren't being fed, you know, constant, you know, Stevens posts. So they're not, you know, clicking on like, or I don't want to see this post anymore. So that's really important that if your office doesn't handle paid promotions to work very closely with the marketing department or whoever does in your university. Since I handle organic, I have a very little budget, but we've been very, very successful in gaining new followers, expanding reach, just in organic content. And the key to that is really creating content that's engaging. Like, you can, you know, a lot of people say, well, I can only create a video that's 15 seconds because that's all people will stay on. If you're creating a video that's engaging, they're going to stay on for a minute. They'll stay on for 2 minutes, but you have to create that engaging content. Give them a place to go after they see that video. Give them a link. Always have a link, you know, at the outro of your video. Go to this. Have very, you know, catchy vanity URLs. So, but always give them a place to go. Don't stop at the end of that video and expect them to take that action that you want them to. You want to give them, you know, whether it's a website, whether it's another social media account, or to follow your social media account. So just take that extra step and have them, you know, go somewhere within your university, one of your digital properties.
I think Michael said it really well when he said you can use paid to reach an audience that doesn't know about your accounts yet. And that's really what we do with the clients we work with. They're all looking to reach prospective students who probably don't know that the institution or the program exists yet, and really that's where paid comes into play. You can behaviorally target these individuals through their interests on the different social platforms, their age, where they're living. Like Michael said, you can upload your email list that you're already sending them communications through so that they're getting a messaging on another platform that they're already active. So I think that that's really when you can kind of make that decision on when to dedicate your marketing budget towards paid is when you're like, okay, we need to reach a new audience, and how do we find them on these social platforms?
One last thing I thought about was related to, you know, we talk about the admissions funnel, and what paid allows us to do is really get hyper-focused about who we're talking to along that funnel. And so as we're talking to people maybe that aren't aware of our universities, we can simply target by maybe a location. But then if we want to get more specific to people who might be somewhat interested in us, it's really easy because we can just simply retarget people that have visited our website. So they're, again, seeing us on Snapchat and Instagram stories. Or if we are wanting to get someone from the applied stage to the I want to come to your school phase, we can upload those lists of people that have applied and, again, be communicating that message and specifically, again, tailoring the messages that are appropriate along that funnel where that prospective student is in their journey to considering our school.
Yeah. Just a follow-up for you guys. Are there platforms that you find work better in terms of the paid than others? Are you using one more than the other? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can jump in with this one. I mean, it really just depends on the target audience you're looking to reach. If you're looking to reach a 16 or 17-year-old, they're probably not active on LinkedIn. If you were trying to reach an adult audience or a graduate audience, LinkedIn really has kind of become the place we've seen the biggest increase in engagement. So again, I think it comes back to who are you looking to reach and kind of where they are in that funnel. So I don't think it's kind of like a one platform fits all type of situation here. I think, again, it comes back to testing as well. So we typically will still include Facebook as a strategy, but more towards parents than undergraduate students that we might have put more resources to even just a year ago, where those undergraduate students are more active on Instagram now. So we're kind of following them there and making sure that they're getting our messaging on that platform that they are most active.
So we've run ads on Snapchat, Instagram stories, Instagram feed, and Facebook related to high school students. And what we're finding is that Snapchat has been by far the most likely to drive people to the website compared to the other ones I mentioned. I also have done Google AdWords. But in terms of like click-through rate, is for sure Snapchat would be hands down. But with that said, some of the other channels of, like Instagram, we have noticed that those visits are more quality. They're spending longer on the website and maybe navigating more likely to navigate through the website as opposed to all the visits that we're getting from Snapchat.
Great. Okay, thank you. So I think we will move on now and talk a little bit about some success stories. So our three panelists have some each a success story or two to talk through how things worked, reaching a certain audience. So go ahead.
As I've mentioned, organic is under my charge, so I have to be very creative with the content that I use and how I'm promoting the university to reach prospective students. So one of the ways that I've been really successful in doing that is reaching out to our alumni network and telling their stories. You know, storytelling is preached to us by, you know, like every aspect of marketing, right? We have to tell stories, we have to, you know, engage in storytelling. And I've really accomplished great success through our alumni. So a lot of our alumni success stories were being featured on our alumni network social media channels. However, our prospective students were not seeing those, obviously. They're not gonna go to those networks and our channels and see that content. So I started adapting that content for that demographic and that channel. So for example, for Instagram, let me pull up my slide here. So you can see, we're very lucky to have some really successful alumni. If you're familiar with Marquez Brownlee, MKPhD on Twitter, he has 7 million followers. He's a tech reviewer. He's incredibly engaged with our target audience. So we did an article in our alumni magazine with Marquez. We published it to our news section of the site. I created a very easy vanity URL. Users, you know, we posted a really great picture on Instagram. Users actually went to the article. We had 9 minutes on page average time, and we had about 40 clicks to our application. So we were able to kind of connect those dots and see how the user journey was playing out, which really worked out very well for us. Again, Jay Weinberg from from Slipknot. He's a drummer of Slipknot, if you're familiar with that band. He's one of our alums. Again, we did a story of him in the Alumni Magazine. I adapted it for our digital presence, then adapted it for social media, posted it on Facebook, felt like our demographic, maybe Slipknot, wasn't in the 16 to 18-year-old age bracket, so to speak. So we put it on Facebook, and we actually got a lot of, I believe the age group is, 24 to 30, I believe, for Facebook, and the consumption was incredible. It's one of our most successful kind of organic campaigns there. But again, it led to, you know, the user journey looking in through Google Analytics. They went from social media to the website, to our graduate admissions, to the application, and then sometimes they often filter into the tuition section. So make sure wherever you're sending people, the content is optimized and ready for that type of consumption and ready for a call to action. So make sure you have a strong call to action on that page, and the user, it will just seamlessly kind of, the dominoes will fall. I'm trying to think of what else we did. But, you know, we had one alum, a strong female leader. And, you know, she went to BuzzFeed. She worked for Gary Vaynerchuk. So those are all, like, names that our target demographics are very familiar with. So we were able to kind of reach a broader audience through those keywords that we probably would have not reached before.
So we were working with Gardner Webb, which is an institution in North Carolina, and they came to us and said, hey, we want to get more people to come to our open house events. It's really difficult to get people on campus, but we found that once we get them here, they're much more likely to apply and to commit to coming to our institution. So what can we do? So we worked with them, and they provided us with their email list of 6,500 students that, again, were already in the pipeline. They were already getting emails from them. They were getting postcards. They were getting brochures, but they weren't responding quite exactly as the client had hoped for through those channels. So we decided to test out some Facebook ads with them. Again, we use that email list, very easy to upload to Facebook. Facebook will match all those emails and then start serving the ads directly to them whenever they're active on the platform. And we also layered in some retargeting campaigns. So this was letting us also identify other users that might not have been on this email list, but were showing interest in the different admissions web pages for Gardner Webb. They clearly were interested in the school, interested in the programs that were available, and we were just going to be able to retarget them and encourage them to come this open house event. Honestly, it was very successful. I guess more successful than the client had even anticipated, given that it's Facebook and it was that undergrad audience of 16 and 17 year olds. But they saw a 233% increase in people registering and attending their open house year over year. And the previous year, they hadn't done any digital paid strategies. So kind of, again, showing the value of putting a little bit of dollars behind these type of efforts. And then it wasn't necessarily a goal that we had been working with on the client, but once the campaigns ended and then they went through their admission cycles, they let us know that they actually saw over 380 more applications year over year. And when they started to talk to the students that were applying and they were able to match them back to them coming to the open house and, again, ask them, like, how did you hear about this? Why did you decide to apply? They were like, we saw your ads on social media and decided that we need to take a deeper look at your institution. And then one other quick example I have, we work with Duquesne. They are in Pittsburgh. They were launching a new transfer and weekend program for their PharmD program. And they were saying, okay, like, we know that there's no branding and awareness with our target audience out there yet. What can we do to make sure people know? And that once we start enrolling our first class, we actually have enough applicants to keep going. We don't have to shut down the program before we even have a chance to get started with it. So kind of similarly, we did with Gardner Webb, we went to these paid social strategies. We ran campaigns on Facebook and Instagram. We also layered on some ads on LinkedIn since they are a little bit of an older audience and we know that they're active on this platform as well. We immediately saw a lot of success using the lead gen platform tactics, if you will. So this lets a user submit their information to your institution directly in the platform. You can do first name, last name, email. Of course, if you need additional information, you can ask for that as well. But it's seamless for the user to get the information to you. And then as the institution, it's seamless for you to take that information and get it into your CRM. So when we ran these campaigns, and they've only actually been live since August, so, you know, only 2 months or so into this campaign we're running with them. They've already received over 200 leads for their program, which is awesome. Again, it's a brand new program. No one knew that these existed. The great thing is about these ads, we can also track if users are clicking on the ad, maybe not taking action right then, but then are later organically going back to the site to fill out an RFI form. So we're seeing some RFI form completions there too, which is really awesome. So the client doesn't have to always be paying for those ads. They still can get that organic additional kind of awareness out there as well.
All right. Sure. So our my example relates to something we did in the spring with the admissions office. The goal was first to raise awareness about the University of Iowa and secondarily to have them attend our junior Hawkeye visit junior Hawkeye visit day weekend in the spring. And so we kind of took a two-step approach to this. We took the list of 10,000 most desired prospects from the admissions office, easily uploaded those into social media, started to run awareness campaigns to them. We did these across a variety of different social media platforms. The one that you're seeing actually ran on Snapchat. It's just 5-second repeating video. But anyway, it worked out very well. So the first 2 weeks sprint we did, again, was just to raise awareness. It was generally, the ad was just speaking to our brand. It didn't necessarily have a call to action, although we did, if they did swipe up to it, send them to the event page that was well done. But then the second step was the second sprint. After these students had received awareness-raising ads in their feed for 2 weeks, now that we started to specifically ask them if they would consider coming to attend our Hawkeye Visit Days event. And as you can see, the ad specifically addresses that specific event. It addresses specifically, we're talking to juniors. We know everyone that is going to see this ad specifically is a junior. And so we think that that would get their attention, most likely addressing them by their age. And so on just some, I think it was maybe $400-something spend, we drove about 300 different students to that website. On average, they spent 2 minutes and 39 seconds on the page, which is phenomenal for a 17-year-old. And it drove 55 online registrations within a few day period.
Great. Thank you. So I want to jump in to kind of the next topic, and that's how to drive action. So having quality social content is great, but do they click? Do they apply? Do they schedule a visit? Do they do the things that we really want them to do? So do you guys have tips on what to do to really force that drive of action to get them to do the things that we want them to do?
My biggest tip is make sure your website is mobile friendly, especially when you're looking to reach these 16 and 17 year olds. They're probably coming to your site from their mobile device, and if they can't find an RFI form to fill out, or they can't find an open house to sign up for, or even just get their question answered, they're going to be frustrated. They'll probably let you know, and then they're going to kind of remove you from their list of potential schools. So that's kind of the biggest tip I have. You'd be surprised in 2018 how many college websites still aren't mobile friendly, but that's kind of low-hanging fruit, if you can think of it as low-hanging fruit, but kind of the first step before you really put a lot of effort into putting out these digital ads or even investing more resources towards organic social.
I would say when you're pushing them to your website, again, make sure your content is optimized, but I always, whatever page we're sending our users to, I run a heat map on it. I can see where they're dropping off, how far they're scrolling down, where the call to action is most effective. I can see where they're clicking, how long they're staying on the page. I use Crazy Egg. It's really a very cost-friendly tool that you can use, and you can monitor as many pages as you'd like, just depending on the plan that you choose. But that really gives you an idea of how people are interacting with your content, what you need to keep, what you need to get rid of, and how to make improvements just based on true data.
Great. I would say just make it as easy as possible. Make the student have to do as little as possible, as few clicks as possible. We don't want them having to look around or try to figure out what it is we're asking them to do. So for instance, we might be driving them to a landing page, and that landing page has kind of our sales pitch of short, brief, and concise information. And then if our goal is to get them to fill out that form, we have that form right there, and we keep that form short. It was one thing we learned last year was the IT folks built us a form that had like 15 fields, and we came back and we're like, students aren't going to take the time to fill out 15 fields that are required. And so making it short, 5 fields, doable for those students.
And one other thing I would add, we haven't talked a lot about parents in our session so far, but in terms of driving action, parents are very good at making their kids do things. So for us, we know that this generation of students is relying on their parents and their family members even more than ever before to help them decide where to go to school. One of the best things we did this year from a social media perspective is create a closed Facebook group specifically for parents and families of admitted seniors. So once they got in, their parents got an email saying, join this group. The amount of prom pictures that I've seen over the last year is crazy. But they connected with each other. We answered a lot of questions for them, made them feel so much more comfortable about their decision to have their student come to WVU. So remember parents. That would be my biggest tip there. So next thing, really about goal setting. So how do you guys make sure that the content that you're creating, whether it is paid or organic, stays strategic? What can you do to make sure that that happens?
I can start. For us, it's really making sure that we're clear up front before we create any ad copy or get started thinking about which tactics we want to implement, is making sure everyone at the table knows what our goals are. It might be branding and awareness. It might actually be getting people to enroll or to make their deposit. And as long as you're starting from there, you can kind of then dive into, okay, which platforms make sense for what we're looking to accomplish? What type of content is going to drive that action? You don't want to be sending a apply now ad to someone who's never even heard of your institution, the program you're talking about. That's just going to be a waste of your marketing dollars, quite honestly. So really, that's our first step. And then kind of following up what we already talked about, making sure you're tracking your efforts, whether that's using the different platforms and looking at their internal data, using Google Analytics, really just making sure that once you're live with these campaigns, organic or paid, you know what's working so you can adjust. It's not like you set it up and then you walk away and come back a month later to see what happened. You really should be optimizing it at all times.
We're an incredibly small school. With like many higher ed institutions, we are very leanly resourced. With every post that we post on whatever channel, we have to be extremely strategic about it. I have a philosophy that if you're targeting everyone, you're reaching no one. So you have to have your targeted audience in mind, what your goal is. Is it supporting not only admissions, but is it supporting your institution's strategic goals? So there's a lot to take into consideration, and I often see a lot of institutions kind of just putting things up there very blindly without noticeable strategy. I've been doing social media for a very long time, and I was in corporate before coming over to higher ed, so it's very apparent to me what the strategy is very quickly, and you can see who's targeting a certain audience and who's just kind of throwing things up there because, you know, maybe they don't have the time or the resources, but try to be as strategic as possible. You know, review your personas, because you can have 100,000 likes on a post and never get an application, but if you're strategic about it, you can have 20,000 likes on a post and get maybe 10, 30, 40 applications. So it's not always about likes and followers and that amount. You need to take the extra step and see, okay, am I converting from this post? Of course, you can always have your fun post. We always do that. I mean, that's what keeps our, you know, current audience engaged. But try to be as strategic as possible. That's my recommendation.
I totally agree. And so I'd take it the next step in that. It would be to develop a documented social media strategy that you can refer to at any moment. And that really has helped us keep focus. We have like it might be 23 pages long, but the goal is certainly not to have that checked off a box and have it sit on a shelf, but it's updated regularly and we refer to it regularly. It talks again about our goals and our audiences. and our different key themes and messages and the ways that we're going to measure our success. We also have channel-specific strategies, so what we're specifically trying to do on Facebook and who we're specifically talking to and the actions that we're hoping that they drive. And we have that broken down by each different social media channel, and that has made a world of difference to help us stay focused and on each of our different posts and scheduling throughout the week. It's just referring, again, back to the documented social media strategy.
Great. I'll finish up with this question, and then we can take some questions from you. So in terms of defining success, what are the key metrics that you're looking at? And then how are you reporting on them? And what are you doing based on those numbers or that information that you're given to make decisions?
Start again. So we report monthly on any campaign that we are putting ad dollars behind. And what we're looking at is obviously increase in click-through rate, the amount of time people are spending on web pages, if we're using lead gen forms, the amount of leads we're getting month over month. And anytime we see a dip, we kind of take a step back and say, okay, are we experiencing ad fatigue? Have we not done a creative refresh in a couple of weeks? Or is it environmental? So it's summer, so we know all of our prospective students are at the beach and not spending a lot of time thinking about campus visits for the coming year when parents are thinking about it. So I think it really, again, comes back to who your audience is and figuring out why you might be seeing changes in the data when you're looking at it, but then being very thoughtful about making changes and not just saying, well, we had a down month, it is what it is, like, let's just see what happens next month, but really saying, okay, what can we do to make sure that next month when we're looking at all of this, we are seeing an increase again.
The way that we handle metrics is we look at them on a daily basis and a monthly basis and a quarterly basis. So the daily basis is looking at literally every post that we had the day before and spending just brief moment assessing its engagement level and how our audience kind of responded to that. And as we do that over time, we're able to really make a clear picture about the type of content that we're posting that matters to our audience, that they are finding worthwhile. Some things that obviously fall flat and gives us a ton of opportunities to learn from and a very micro level is looking at post by post. Another instance where looking at just a specific number of posts has helped us. We track how many people watch the first view of our every single one of our Instagram stories and Snapchat stories and then the last view. And so over time we started looking at the number of posts in an Instagram story or Snapchat story and the retention rate as it relates to retention rate. And so we got really drilled down to where are we losing people? Where is that retention rate starting to noticeably drop? And so we've been able to make specific strategic decisions based on that type of information. In addition to that, we're, again, measuring monthly metrics and quarterly metrics that we're sharing up and out to higher level leadership to see like kind of a macro level of what we're accomplishing on social media. And then finally, the last thing, the specific question you asked was, what metrics matter? And so I would just go back to what were the goals of what we're trying to do in terms of how they matter. And so sometimes it's going to be the metrics that matter might be the number of impressions or engagements based on, again, that admissions funnel, if we're talking about admissions specifically. So we might care more about if it was an awareness campaign, we're going to care more about how many people saw the ad and were engaged with it, as opposed to went to a specific prospect list and we wanted them to fill out a form so that we communicate with them further. That key metric would be filling out that form. And then ultimately you can get all the way down to admissions if you want to. So it just really varies for us by what our goal is.
I would agree that whatever your goal is going to change the way you measure a post or define its success. I also oversee the website for Stevens. So I find that social media and the website analytics go very much hand in hand. If you have a data person at your university, or maybe you are the one who's also handling your metrics and analytics, definitely take the extra steps, especially for your organic posts, and try to map out your user journey for successful posts and see where users are going from that post. I report weekly, monthly, quarterly, and at the end of every fiscal year to the board. So the board, at a very high level, has charged me with increasing followers and engagement. That's what they're most concerned with, I'm sure, with most university boards. However, in order for me to meet those numbers, I have to really sit down and see what's working, what's not working, follow my users, and try to convert them at different steps of their journey based on the goal. So again, it's very goal specific, but I think if you are not currently creating posts based on goals and measuring them specific to that goal, you're going to see a huge difference when you start to do it. It takes a lot of work, and it's a really kind of a hard habit to get into if you don't do it right now, but you will yield success, you really will. So I highly recommend just, you know, being very goal specific in all of your strategies.
Okay, so I think we have a couple of minutes left. Does anybody have any questions for the panelists?
Thanks. Hi, do you ever hesitate to do a paid ad campaign for fear of driving down your organic reach later on?
No. Not really. I want to say when users are receptive to your paid content, they're in a very specific mind frame to, and if they act on it, to consume that content, act on it, and create a conversion ultimately for your goal. Organic, I think you really have to look at the psychology of the user, and we're kind of going on two different paths with paid and organic. I'm kind of reaching people at moments where they didn't really expect to consume, you know, content from a university, especially in relation to a prospective student or their families. So that's a big part of my strategy. I use hashtags that maybe aren't specific to higher ed, or on Instagram, I'll post photos and the hashtags I'm using are related to, we're near New York City. It's in our backyard. It's a gold mine for content. So if I post a photo of, you know, the skyline, I'm reaching people that are looking for New York City photos, tourism in New York City. So you can see where you can kind of, you know, they go down that rabbit hole, they'll find your institution. Whereas paid, you're very targeted. You want to reach somebody when they're thinking about going to a university or looking for a program. So it's very different with two similar outcomes, but very different paths. So get into the psychology of your users when you're doing organic and paid for sure.
I think that, I mean, for me, it's always been organic and paid go hand in hand. You're going to use paid to drive new users to your social accounts, and then you're going to be using the organic to keep them engaged through their journey as a prospective student, hopefully when they become a student, and then ultimately an alum and a donor. So it's not that you would necessarily be choosing one over another, but really thinking about when does paid make sense, and then when do you put your efforts towards organic?
That's very true. You're just reaching people in their different spots in their user journey, so to speak, in the customer life cycle. So I think that's a good point.
I've anecdotally noticed
I've definitely noticed that. I would say a year ago, I would have stayed away from a paid ad knowing that. Organic reach is so bad anymore on Facebook, for example, for everyone. I don't think that way anymore. We have to use paid if we have that budget to be really strategic about the things that we do. That's just my honest thought.
Yeah, we've seen a rebound in, like, there was a moment where what you're referencing actually crossed my mind, and I noticed that. But that is no longer the case. We're not seeing any type of impact based on, like, boosting posts and things like that.
Okay, I have a question. So for those of you that are using the paid, you know, advertisements, I know you're not so much, but. And you mentioned you work quite a bit with the Office of Admissions, you know, to secure a prospective list and all of that. So, for example, for, like, the admissions recruiters that might go to, like, certain cities in the United States or beyond, then are you putting in, like, advertisements to those? So say you're going to Columbia.
Yeah.
There's a fair there. Would you do a paid advertisement to a group there, or?
That's ironic that you say that, because we do that exact thing. Yeah, we have recruiters making visits to specific cities, and ahead of those visits, we have ad campaigns in those cities targeted to the specific students that live in those communities.
So then you develop, like, an actual advertisement saying we're at this, you know, recruitment event, or
we don't do it that way. How we do it is they're more general brand ads. They're not specific to the event.
Okay.
We want Iowa to be at the top of their mind It's probably not going to be the topic. We want us to be on their mind when they go to that event. So it's they see it on Snapchat, and then they go to the event, and there's dots connected. So that's how we do it.
Okay.
I would say I think it just depends on if that's kind of the most valuable thing for you, and that's like what your top goal is. For the clients we work with, we don't do that as much, although we have before. But really, for us, it's kind of reaching the masses of their prospective student pool and just getting them, again, like Michael said, that brand awareness so that when they come across an event and the school's there, or when they come across a brochure they get in the mail, it's like, oh, I've seen this school before. This is somewhat familiar. Like, let me take a moment to look more into it. But we do have some clients where they're like, we have to get a certain number of students to come to our booth and to fill out our RFI form that day. So that's our main goal. So I think, again, it just kind of depends on your situation. And is it more, again, that higher level brand awareness with the bigger prospective pool, or is it at those individual cities where maybe you're trying to break into a new market and you want to make sure that you're getting enough inquiries there so that it makes sense to go back next year?
Any more questions?
Okay, we'll take this last question here.
Hi, my name is Fred. I'm from Global Affairs Canada. My question is around influencers. Have you used them, and have you found them to be an effective mix within your paid and organic and so on?
I've used them before, but not in the same sense that I do now working with paid campaigns. I previously worked in a central marketing office, and we use alumni influencers to help us just get the word out there about the institution. It was more, you know, we are launching a new program or we are ranked, whatever it might be. We just wanted more people that might not be following our social accounts organically to know what was happening. And our view was, you know, these alums that we were working with felt very passionately about the institution. And if their friends saw those posts, they might say, oh, like, I didn't even realize that my friend went to the school and they have a graduate program. But for the work we do now, we don't really involve influencers. We probably have to pay them, and for us, it's just not a priority. So again, I think it comes back to kind of what your goals are, where you want to be putting your marketing dollars, and again, what makes sense for your specific program or institution that you're working with.
I guess for us, I would say there's the influencers with the lowercase I, that they're the everyday students, and we use them to influence the rest of prospective students, hopefully their former classmates or things like that. And so we, like, the admissions office runs a blog run by our students, or we have obviously student takeovers. All of us likely do those type of things. I think that's one way to influence or use influencers. The other, with those that have significant clout, it's something our office is just starting to look into. For instance, we have two twins at our school that are sophomores, and they have like 400,000 YouTube subscribers. And every video that they post gets hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of posts. And they will regularly insert University of Iowa into them, and we love that. But we're talking about, how do we leverage that? How do we get them to keep doing what we're hoping that they do, and things like that. And then we're looking at other students on campus that have similar, that they may not have 400,000, but they have 6,000 YouTube subscribers and videos that get viewed thousands of times. And so how do we leverage those students to talk about the messages that we want them to talk about? So those are conversations that we're just starting to have.
And from my perspective, we have a group of campus social media influencers that we utilize from time to time. One example specifically, we had a BuzzFeed quiz that we developed that basically said, like, who would your best friend at WVU be? And the answers were some of our influencers. They got to reach out to them on Twitter or Instagram, DM them, and talk back and forth. To us, that was an easy, organic way for them to find fit. At the university, that worked out a lot. We don't use that strategy a lot because that puts a lot of pressure on those students to answer those DMs and say the right things and do all of that. But that really worked out well for us. So, okay, thank you, everyone. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.